marriage is a workshop for sanctification because we need to grow in holiness, and we have a ways to go. And frankly, I think until you get married, you don't really know just how far you have to go, how selfish you can be, really, quite frankly. And that's an issue. But I'd like to go through these, and just I think this would be a good use of our time this evening with the half hour or so we've got left, to go through what the book of Proverbs is. You know, the book of Proverbs is an unbelievable storehouse of wisdom, isn't it? You look through it, and there's just so much in there about human relationships. It's very practical, isn't it? And about parenting. There's a lot of stuff. This is kind of a transition note. When we get going again, we're going to talk about parenting. So we're kind of done to some degree with marriage, but there's no end to what we could say about that. But I'd like to transition, start looking at parenting issues as well. Let's talk about that. Okay, well, that's probably wise, you know. All right. Her ears were tingling, that's right. All right, well, let's look at some of these things on conflict resolution. You know what's funny about this? You have to understand that the book of Proverbs was written mostly by who? Solomon. What kind of life did he have? Did he have a good kind of personal life? I mean, you know, you can know all this stuff and still have a messed up life. And Solomon is a good example of that. I mean, he had a lot of wives, frankly. I mean, he had a lot of women to interact with. So, and his life wasn't put together, really. I mean, in the end, you have to believe that Ecclesiastes may be a statement of his final outlook on life and that he came to the right conclusion in the end. But I guess my point in bringing up the life of Solomon is to realize that, you know, we can know all these things. But Jesus said, you know these things, you'll be blessed if what? If you do them, if you put them into practice. So I think that's something. Let's take a look at this here. First of all, what is God's attitude toward dissension? Now, I know we went from conflict very quickly to dissension, and they're two different things. Conflict may not necessarily be a bad thing. It may be just two different perspectives, and that they, in the end, could be fit together like a lock and a key or like two puzzle pieces. And each of you is bringing a perspective to it that needs to be listened to. That's why, as Jack said, the communication skills are so important, because if not, it could be that one side of the truth, one perspective, will just get obliterated. And that's not good, because both of them are contributing something useful. But so often human conflict goes quickly into dissension, doesn't it? And it goes into this kind of negative conflicts. So Proverbs 6, 16 through 19 lists six things that the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him, and one of them is a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. God hates dissension. He really does. Our God is a God of peace and of order. He's a God of peace and order and of love and good relationships. And so when there's strife, when there's conflict, when there's dissension, it is not a reflection of God's nature. Isn't it a remarkable thing that the Father, the Son, and the Spirit can live in intimate fellowship with one another and never disagree about anything, ever? I mean, there's not a shifting shadow of disagreement between those three persons of the Trinity, ever. It's sin that causes those problems. And so I think it's good for us to recognize how contrary to the character of God this is. It really is not the way it's meant to be. Human conflicts produce a kind of devastation. Look at Proverbs 17:1. It says there, better a dry crust with peace than a house full of feasting with strife. Have you ever had a holiday meal and this proverb just came alive to you? You know, it's like, look, you know, we've had this feast, but we've had a hard time. You know, I remember when I was growing up, I don't want to say any stories and all that, but I remember thinking about this, about memories that I had of great food and terrible times, you know. And I guess there's just a real truth to this. I'd rather eat a dry crust than go through what we've gone through here tonight, kind of thing. Or Proverbs 18:19, an offended brother is more unyielding than a fortified city, and disputes are like the barred gates of a citadel. Have you ever perhaps seen your spouse that way? Kind of like a barred citadel that needs to be somehow... No? Never. Okay, well, other than Mike, maybe some of you may have offended your brother or sister and found them to be like an unyielding citadel or like bars of a gate. And it's tough when it gets like that. And it would be better to not have gotten to that point. What a waste. It's really a sad waste of time. Proverbs 21:9, better to live on a corner of the roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Now, when I taught this to Amen, now listen, be careful. Careful now. There's a number of these so-called quarrelsome wife proverbs, but you know, you say, well, what's the story about man? Well, the men are covered in all the other dissension conflict type verses. I mean, this is a problem for both genders. This isn't just, I mean, it's not just women that are quarrelsome. Men can be quarrelsome too. And so I think there's a problem here. And that Proverbs 21:9, is saying, look, I'd rather, you know, roll out a sleeping bag up in the attic than to go through this ongoing strife and conflict. So the point of all of these cumulatively is that this is a devastating thing in relationships. And it's something that you know, we have to be very, very careful about. Well, let's get to the root of it. What causes these things? The Bible has actually a lot to say about the root causes of these conflicts. Well, one of them is pride. Look at 13:10. Somebody read that for me right on the sheet there. How does pride breed quarrels? How does that happen? Putting yourself and your perspective above the other person. Other thoughts on how does pride foster quarrels? Mm-hmm. Competitiveness. That's right. So you've got, and it's kind of like your perspective, your side of the story, and you want to kind of, it's almost like a team you want to win. And so there's a winning and a losing then, and that pride comes from that. This proverb has become very important for me because Christy gives me good advice, and I don't always take it, speaking quite plainly. I'll give you an example. It has to do with my clothing selection sometimes. I don't know. I certainly don't want to embarrass you, honey, but I'm willing to put myself on the line here. There are times that I don't make the best clothing selection. Or, you know, get my hair looking the way it needs to be, okay? I mean, just in my opinion, I think it looks all right, but, you know, et cetera. She knows better, okay? And how would this proverb kick in and give me some wisdom to avoid a conflict? How would this proverb work to help me? Pride only breeds quarrels, but wisdom is found in those who what? Take advice, okay? So how would that help us circumvent a prideful quarrel? Just do it. Whatever she says. Yeah. Say, hon, how do I look? Does this tie go well? How does my hair look? And maybe even to seek it out. There you go. Any suggestions on what I might want to wear tonight? That's right. With a happy spirit. All the way right away with a happy spirit. That's right. You know, that's true. But it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes you forget. And so it could be you are fully dressed and still the suggestion comes, and even then this proverb can help you. You know, for you just to humbly say thank you. Thank you. What is her motive? She wants me to look well. She wants me to look my best. That's all. That's a motive. There's nothing else other than that. There's no desire to tear me down. Quite the opposite. But I don't always see it that way. Oh, what's wrong with my decisions here? I mean, I thought a long time about the tie that I chose, you know. So what if it clashes? I mean, to me it looks good, that kind of thing. So pride can really lead you quickly into quarrels, can't it? So often it really does. Another kind of cause of quarrels is instant annoyance. 12:16, a fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. Isn't that wise? I mean, there are times that your spouse may be just flat out ornery or irritable, all right? And they may say something they'll later wish they hadn't said. How does this proverb help you in that situation? Do you have a sheet? There you go. Got a sheet for you. Thanks. How would this proverb help you so that you don't fall into that kind of a conflict? They hurl something at you. It shouldn't be said, but, you know, how would this help you? Don't be too quick. Okay. Yeah. Don't be thin-skinned. If you're thin-skinned, you can get yourself immediately into a problem, can't you? What do you mean by that? And off you go. You know, not that ever happens, but I mean, instant annoyance. It's better to overlook things. Do you have to overlook things to have a healthy marriage? Yeah. I mean, somebody told me just about pastoral ministry. Actually, it wasn't somebody who told me, but I read Charles Spurgeon said, if you want to be a pastor, you have to have one blind eye, one deaf ear, and know when to turn them. Okay? You just have to. I mean, you have to know when to overlook things that come your way. And the same is true, I think, in a good marriage. You just have to know when to say, look, you know, I understand. And, you know, tomorrow will be me feeling that way, and you'll have to overlook something I say. All right, instant annoyance. Anger is a big problem. You know, all of these you know, are so good. 15:18, a hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. Are you the kind of person that's pouring kerosene or a bucket of water on the problem? Are you stirring it up or are you trying to calm it down? 29:11, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. You know, full vent means all bets are off. You know, well, all bets are not off, and things that will be said over the next X number of minutes will be remembered. And so try to be careful. Restrain yourself. 29:22, an angry man stirs up dissension, and a hot-tempered one commits many sins. Isn't that true? You know what's interesting about anger? Most human anger is sin. I would say almost all of it. Think about it. There is an anger that is not sin. Jesus got angry. God gets angry. What is the nature of that anger? What's at stake there? A pure and holy anger. What would that be all about? A righteous anger. Hating things that God hates. Things that would anger God. Did Jesus ever get angry? Yeah, several times. There's accounts of Jesus getting angry. He got angry at his disciples for resisting the people who were bringing children to place hands. And he certainly got angry when he made that whip and drove the, you know, animals out. And he got angry at the hardness of heart at some people who wouldn't answer a simple question about a healing on the Sabbath. So he did. So there is. But now think about it. Of the last 100 times you've been angry, how many of them were in that category? I mean, just be honest with yourself. Doesn't most anger come from pride and inconvenience, for the most part? You get angry about things that annoy you and irritate you and get in your way, or things that hurt your pride. I think that that is the root of most of it. And therefore, the book of James calls anger, for the most part, moral filth that you need to take out. Anger does more damage in marriages than probably anything else. Another thing that can cause quarrels or conflicts are words. Just words. And the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about words. 18:21 says, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. The tongue is a powerful thing, isn't it? All right, what kind of words? Well, first of all, just many words. Somebody read 10:19. Yeah, another translation says, when words are many, sin is inevitable. I mean, the more you talk, the likelihood just goes up and up that you'll say something you shouldn't say. So it's just a matter of holding your tongue. Reckless words, 12:18, reckless words pierce like a sword. Have you ever felt that? Ooh, boy. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. I think that's the beauty of Proverbs is it's giving really what you should be doing with the tongue. Not what you shouldn't, but what you should be doing. Rather than using your tongue to hurt, you should be using your tongue to heal. And so, reckless words, harsh words. 15:1, I think Christy and I have this up on our mirror, I believe. I think it's so strong. Somebody read 15:1. How would that work in a marriage? What do you think, Mike? You look like you wanted to say something. I want to give you a chance. You can go sit in there if you want, or you can read the Bible. There's an escalation that goes on there. Yeah, sure.
Three words. Why did you?
Why did you? Yeah. And that stirs things up, doesn't it, when you start going into that. But a gentle word is like that bucket of water on the fire, you know? And you just say, you know, in a gentle way, you know, I want to understand you. I want to try to understand. Or even to say, I understand how you feel that way. I understand. And we have found this to be a very powerful proverb. It's very, very useful. A lot of conflicts can be just cut off at the pass with this one. You know, just a gentle word. But the converse is true as well. A harsh word can stir up anger. Deceitful words is another one. 15:4, the tongue that brings healing is a tree of life, but a deceitful tongue crushes the spirit. And as north wind brings rain, so a sly tongue brings angry looks. So that's obviously hurtful. Gossip and insults also listed there. Let's look at the next page. Another thing that stirs up conflict is hatred. One of the things about hatred there is clear from 10:12 is that it's someone who doesn't overlook an offense, somebody who holds a grudge. Hatred stirs up dissension, but love covers over all wrong. So in that case, you're getting an understanding of what the proverb means by hatred. And what it means is an unwillingness to cover over a wrong. You know, the theme in the Bible of the covering of sin is one of the most important themes in the Bible. Sin is covered. It doesn't no longer exist. It's covered. Like the word Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, literally means the day of covering of sin. Because sin happens, doesn't it? We can't deny it. The only thing that can be done is that it can be covered by grace, covered by forgiveness, covered by the blood of Christ, for example. And God is in the business of covering sin, isn't He? He really is. I mean, you look at what did He do to Adam and Eve after all the sin and all that. What did He do to them? He covered them up. And His covering is better than their covering. Their covering is a form of self-righteousness. God's covering is atonement, forgiveness. And if you don't do that in a marriage, you're going to have huge problems. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we're just addressing anger, it seems like the real question then for us is how do we address when we have anger? And for example, I think it can also be quite dangerous to ignore offenses too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about over-righteousness. I've just heard an expression that anger can seep out in too many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think I'm hearing from you right now, or at least you're not addressing this sense of what we do when we are offended.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I could subscribe to the view that when I'm offended, it is necessarily, when I'm angry, it is necessarily sin.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from this righteous anger. You're right. And the last 100 times I've been angry, none of them has been standing up for the gospel.
Right. Or the glory of God. Or some other third party who was injured. It's just when we get involved, that's when you need to get suspicious of anger. That's
but, I mean,
all.
We've all been insulted, and that
right.
tends to make us angry. And
right.
Is that necessarily our own sin, our own fault?
Well. No, the Bible does say be angry and don't sin. At least this much we can say, be careful at that moment. I just want you to be suspicious of anger, because anger is a damaging thing in a marriage, and that's all. But let's get to the deeper issue. I am not at all advocating covering over issues. No, not at all. I'm advocating covering over sin. When it's clear the other person has sinned, there's only one thing. Well, you have two choices. You can cover it, or you can keep bringing it up. And you can keep saying, you know, well, you did this and whatever. And that's unforgiveness. It's keeping a record of wrongs. That's all. But issues do need to be discussed through. And I think if we were to keep going in Proverbs, we would see that. You really should. And this is something I'm teaching on Sunday evenings, that as a community together, we don't, you know, fail to go to a sinning brother and take the speck out of the brother's eye. We need to do that for each other. And certainly husbands and wives need to do that. I would say, wouldn't you say that pretty much your spouse is the most honest person in the world with you? It's the one who, she or he is the one who is most likely to tell you the truth about an issue. And that really is a good thing if it's done well. Because most of us, the rest of us don't do that anymore. At all. Have you noticed? We just almost don't ever go to somebody who's doing things wrong and say anything about it. And I think that's a big problem. But at least in most marriages it's done, it just isn't necessarily done well. That's all. So I'm not at all, Rick, advocating just cover it over, paper it over, pretend it isn't there. Not at all. And your question about anger is a good one. I'm just asking you to be suspicious of your anger. Because James does call it moral filth. And so that gives us a little clue as to what God thinks about it. All right, good. People who love a quarrel, you know, could be, you know, I love a good scrap. You know, you get into it. So, you know, and I think you can get into habits, can't you? You know, and habits of arguing. Unforgiveness. Rick, this is another one, 17:9. He who covers over an offense promotes love. There's that concept again of covering. Do you see that? But whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. What does it mean in that context to repeat the matter?
Retaliate
or keep bringing it up. Oh, remember what you did? You know, whatever. And that happens. Misunderstanding is a big source of conflicts, isn't it? He who answers before listening. That is his folly and his shame. Does that ever happen to you? And then you find out the whole thing was a misunderstanding because you didn't listen. Go ahead, Matt. That's right. That's right. And if you're in communication with somebody, the first thing you need to do is listen. The book of James says everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, for man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth. That's what I was quoting earlier. But at any rate, we should be quick to listen. He who speaks before listening, that's folly and shame. And we do that with each other. Alcohol and drugs can be a source of conflict. You know, that's obvious. But if you've got a spouse that's abusing one of those, you're going to have problems. Adultery certainly can. Provocation from fools and greed. These are various things. Now, how should we avoid conflicts? We only have about another 3 or 4 minutes, but let's just go over them quickly. One of the ways to avoid a conflict is to be patient and even-tempered, or to have a long fuse. I mean, there's some people, I think, that are naturally this way. You know, and I'm jealous of them. I'm not that way. But they're just very slow to anger. And I think that's a good thing. 1429 says, a patient man has great understanding, but a quick-tempered man displays folly. 1632, better a patient man than a warrior, a man who controls his temper than one who takes a city. So there it is. Another thing is overlook an insult. We've already talked about that. Another thing is to be an active peacemaker. A hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. Be an active peacemaker. Use gentle and healing words. We've already talked about that. Forgive quickly and wholeheartedly as the Lord forgave you. We've quoted 10:12 and 17:9. Drop the matter quickly. Look at this one. Before it gets out of control. Starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam, so drop the matter before the dispute breaks out. Have you ever noticed that? It's kind of like it starts small and just starts to rip, and it gets bigger and bigger. Some things should be nipped in the bud right from the start. Drop it before it gets big. Don't hang around people who love to argue. Well, I know this is about marriage, and it's kind of like if your spouse loves to argue, you're kind of stuck, so then you just need to pray and just work on it. Or at least you yourself shouldn't be a person who loves to argue. So I don't know how much you can apply this one to marriage. You need to hang around with your spouse, spend lots of time together. And these are some other. These were general things that don't necessarily all relate to marriage, but some of them do. How should we resolve conflicts? Well, number one is listening. Look at 18:2. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. I'm a fool sometimes. I mean, you get into it, and all you can do is air your own opinion. And you really have no desire to hear that of your spouse. Get all the facts. 18:18, the first to present his case seems right till another comes forward and questions him. That's good for parenting, by the way, don't you think, Christy? You know, because the first one who presents their side of the story, then the other side comes in and it's radically different. I don't know, that may have happened in your parenting. It happens in ours. Use gentle healing words and also persuade. Look at 25:15. Through patience, a ruler can be persuaded and a gentle tongue can break a bone. And then finally, page 4, make amends for sin. That's big, isn't it, between husbands and wives? Ask for forgiveness. 14:9, fools mock at making amends for sin, but goodwill is found among the upright. What does it mean to make amends for something? Say you're sorry. Okay. What else? Ask for forgiveness. That's right. Huh? Flowers, candy. That, I think, is bribery, and I think that is covered in the book of Proverbs many times. A bribe can open the eye of the wise or something like that. Anyway, no, I think that, you know, I think making amends is more than just saying you're sorry and all that, but it is part of that. But I think sometimes you have to say, look, you know, what I did was wrong. You know, I hurt you, and that was wrong, and I'm sorry. And I'm sorry that's part of who I am, and I'm not going to promise I'll never do it again. I wish it were out. But that's when it becomes the workshop of sanctification. Then you need to become a spiritual beggar. You need to go to God and say, this is who I am. I can't change myself. I need help. All right. Forgive quickly and wholeheartedly. We covered that. Don't feed the issue. Let it die. Without wood, a fire goes out. Without gossip, a quarrel dies down. Don't feed it. Leave retribution to God. Okay. I don't know how much that applies to marriage. You don't necessarily want God to do that. But anyway, show kindness even to the worst enemy. Again, these were general, not just for marriage. Please don't misunderstand what this sheet was for. If your enemy is hungry, give him. I mean, so this would be good for a wife if she's really upset at her husband. Still feed him. Still give him a meal. You know, in doing so, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Give a gift. Drive out the mocker, casting lots. When all else fails, flip a coin. Sorry. At any rate, those are proverbs on conflict resolution. I would urge you to look them over, maybe add to them if you find some others in the book of Proverbs. That was a whirlwind tour. We're 3 minutes over. Why don't we close in prayer? Father, thank you for the chance we had to slip in here and do some looking at Proverbs. And I pray, God, that you would help us in our marriages to be what you want us to be. God, I pray that you'd help us to be patient, to be gentle and loving, to be like Christ, and that we would take this wisdom and put it in practice. In Jesus' name, amen.